From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So, it's mid-July, and in most places throughout the U.S., that means it's hot. At least it's hot outside. Hot in that space between the parking lot and the lobby. Hot in that space between the driveway and the house. There's a good chance that most of you listening to this program at work can't open the windows in your office. It's because the spaces we've come to work and even live in are controlled, climate controlled. That means you've got central air. It's air conditioning. And that's the subject of today's program. We're talking about air conditioning. We'll explore the history of what it means to be comfortable and how air conditioning has changed the way we work and live. Of course, we'll also explore what all of that cool air has cost us over time. So join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In the early days of air conditioning, it was thought there was a comfort zone for human beings, an ideal thermal temperature at which everyone would feel comfortable. Well, if you've ever fought over the thermostat at home or at the office, you know that zone is pretty much different for everybody. As far as air conditioning is concerned, there has never been agreement about it. From the time it was first conceived, people have argued about its costs and its benefits. Today in the program, we're talking about air conditioning. We'll explore its history and the effects of air conditioning on the way we work and the way we live. And we're hoping to hear from you today. You can join us at 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Can you imagine a life without air conditioning? Can you remember a time when it didn't exist? The advantages of air conditioning are obvious, but what have we lost for the comforts that we've gained? 801-585-WEST. Again, the number, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us first on the program is Steve Connor. He's a principal engineer with Colvin Engineering Associates here in Salt Lake City. Specializes in sustainable heating and air conditioning systems for large buildings. And we should mention that Connor also serves on the University of Utah's Net Zero Advisory Committee. And we'll say something about that as we go along. But Steve Connor, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Doug.
Well, I guess we should start with because we're going to spend some time talking about the history of air conditioning, and we're going to begin with you, though, talking about the particular costs, some of the more practical costs, I guess, of air conditioning. But let me get a sense of do you feel like you have a conflicted relationship with air conditioning? I mean, you're a guy who thinks a lot about the environmental and energy costs about it, but you like to be cool when it's hot, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
you feel conflicted like the rest of us?
Well, conflicted, yes, but also sort of by being in the middle of it. The conflicts often come from what you talked about, comfort.
Yeah.
Because what is comfort?
Exactly.
And we all think that comfort is the temperature on the thermostat.
Right.
And there's studies all over the place that say people are comfortable until they see the temperature, and then they're uncomfortable.
Right.
And so sort of defining what comfort is.
It's relative. It's subjective.
It's very subjective. And right now, we're probably differently comfort. You're probably more comfortable than I am.
Exactly. But you had mentioned to us over the past few days when we've been getting ready for this program, this project you have in Utah County. And it surprised me that the median temperature in the building was 82.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for most of us, they're going to say that, wow, that's hot. That would make me uncomfortable. And you saw that the building was registering at 81 or 82. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which one it was. And you called down there to say, is everything okay?
What's wrong?
And what did you find?
The answer was nothing. Why are you asking?
Yeah.
Because we cooled it with a different system. We used a radiant cooling system. And radiant is a very comfortable source of comfort, comfortable comfort.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of the classic example is on a sunny day sitting out on the deck at Snowbird or something, and it might be 30 degrees outside, but the sun's shining and you're very comfortable, even though the air temperature is so cold. So broadening this definition of comfort and saying, what's really the goal? The goal is to give people an environment in which they can function well.
Yeah.
Okay? In an office or a school or something. The point is not to make them 72 degrees. The point is to make them function. So what if you, by radiantly cooling, you're just as comfortable and the air temperature is 82 degrees? Well, then you haven't had to cool the building nearly as much and you've saved quite a bit of energy. And there's all sorts of other factors that kind of go into comfort. Air movement, you know, the ceiling fan that that cools and makes – there's something that – like a 4 degrees, they say, and getting back to the temperature thing, a ceiling fan makes you feel 4 degrees cooler. So air movement and radiant and a couple other factors kind of go into it, into this definition of comfort.
It seems like it's like wind chill.
Well, you know, it's wind chill.
Right? Because – what I mean by that is wind chill is this idea that – it may be this particular temperature, but it feels like this temperature.
Right. Perception is reality.
Yeah.
Do you perceive comfort? And that goes back to the thermostat on the wall. You know, if you don't know the temperature, you kind of go, oh, I'm doing okay, typically. And sometimes it's really hot. Then you go over to the thermostat and go, oh, no wonder. But how you perceive comfort is very important. And it's interesting for an engineer because that's not typically our bailiwick, so to speak, of dealing with how people feel. You know, we're much more of a numbers and very objective sort of thing. But in this industry, how people feel and how they perceive what's going on around them is critical and sometimes tough to figure out.
How much are we spending to stay cool in the summer? What are the costs? I guess it's difficult, but in terms of and we'll get to sort of the global warming and global climate change question as we go, but just in terms of how much when you're devoting resources to, you know, you're spending money on particular buildings, how much of that goes into this odd idea of comfort?
Well, you know, there's a statistic that says about 40% of all the energy in this country is used in buildings. And within a building, then, about a quarter of that is just to keep it cool. So roughly 10% of all the energy used in this country goes to keeping us cool. And that's, you know, air conditioning really kind of is broad enough to include heating as well. And I'm not even talking about heating, just to keep us cool. That's a round number, but on the order of 10% of every bit of energy we use is for that purpose.
The other cost, the environmental cost, do we know how much air conditioning is contributing to climate change? Are we able to sort of start quantifying
that? Sort of indirectly, because the air conditioning is all electric. In other words, you run air conditioning with electricity. Electricity, certainly in this area, is almost entirely from burning coal. And coal is a very CO2-intensive process.
Yeah.
So to the degree – and I try to stay out of the politics and all the stuff of CO2, but it's clear that burning coal releases CO2. CO2 is a greenhouse gas. And the climate is warming. Those are three sort of things that are sort of generally accepted. So without getting into the politics, the less coal you have to burn, the better everyone's going to be. So can we think of ways to get this comfort and to make people cool without burning so much coal, without using so much electricity? That's the challenge. That's the fun thing that's going on these days.
And that's the thing you're thinking about. Okay, we want people to be comfortable, but how do we do it where just simply – blasting people with frigid air is the solution. We're trying to find other kinds of ways.
Yeah, and sort of the reverse of that as well. Comfort is not blasting people with cold air. Yeah. How can we make them comfortable and use less energy? Our sort of general goal is how can we do it and use half the energy? And if we can get there, then let's do it with half again. And that's sort of the progress that the industry is kind of working towards these days is let's cut our energy consumption in half in buildings. And there's all sorts of great stuff going on, primarily in the commercial realm, not so much residential, but commercial in particular. And that's where a lot of energy is used. So in this climate, in Utah's climate, evaporative cooling is a very, very effective thing. It cuts the cooling cost by 80%.
Now, okay, so for a lot of people, you say evaporative cooling. You're talking – this is swamp cooler.
Yeah, well, that's the
– is that right? That's the old clunky term?
That's the clunky term.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I grew up with a swamp cooler.
Sure. And I've got one in my house now.
Do you?
Yeah.
It was great. I remember it being – and but it seems like the idea of evaporative cooling seems like this kind of – this thing that went – that became obsolete somehow. But you're saying that's not exact. That's not it at all?
Well, residentially, you never see evaporative cooling going into the new houses.
Yeah.
And it's really – driving Rocky Mountain Power's growth is they have to be able to provide air conditioning or electricity on these hot summer afternoons. And that's more than anything is what's causing them to have to put in more power plants and power plants sort of located locally. And that's a whole political ball of wax as well. Nobody wants a power plant or high voltage lines in their neighborhood. But it's really being driven by this need, this perceived need for real, and I kind of use the little air quotes, air conditioning, to admit to using evaporative cooling now is almost – people kind of look at you funny.
Yeah.
But it goes back to that idea of comfort. Do I really need to be 72 when I come home from work at night, or do I just kind of acknowledge that it's summertime? It's okay to be a little bit warmer. And it's okay to open the windows, and maybe it won't be quite 72 inside. But that's that goes to this idea of comfort. The air is blowing; it's damper, but it's good enough. In commercial buildings, good enough really doesn't work so well. So there's much more sophisticated systems that we do, and we do. They're all over the valley. There's a lot of buildings in town that are evaporatively cooled that you don't even know because the more high-tech stuff works. It costs a little bit more to install, but it saves a dramatic amount of energy.
So many of us right now are working in buildings where you couldn't open a window if you wanted to. Like there isn't a latch for the office, for mm-hmm. example, for a window where I am. And you've talked about how there are these studies, and I think they were in Europe maybe, where people said they wanted a window that they could open. They want to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But the studies found that they weren't opening the windows. They weren't really using the windows. What is that about? What does that say about
because
it?
Because of that human thing again.
That human thing.
That human thing. That thing of what is truly comfort or how do people react to their environment. Two interesting things came out of these studies. One of which is that people are much more tolerant of a large temperature range if they have an operable window. So if you go in and measure the temperature and it's actually 78 or 79 degrees, people will say, oh, I'm fine. It's because they have this ability to control.
They have control.
They have control. Whether or not they're exercising that control is different. And often those windows are closed because we all think we want operable windows. But then when you leave them open overnight by accident and the wind blows through and it rains maybe and the rain comes in and gets your papers wet or you hear the traffic noise outside or dust is blowing through or any one of a number of things that cause people to go, just close the window.
Yeah.
The studies have found that the second interesting thing that came out of the studies is they're trying to give people feedback. They would give them a little signal that says, okay, the temperature outside is such that it would make sense for you to open your window now. It's not too hot. It's not too cold.
Yeah.
What they were finding is people would come in the morning, open the window, and just leave it, regardless of whether it was warm or cold outside. And then the maintenance crew would come in at night and close it. And they weren't necessarily gathering the savings because sometimes they were getting a lot of hot air blowing through or a lot of cold air blowing through. So the reviews are sort of mixed on the functionality of operable windows.
Okay. So as an environmentally conscious engineer, do you want people to be able to open their windows?
Yeah, generally. There's a bit of a self-serving part to that because, again, going back to that first point of people are much more tolerant of a wide temperature band when they have operable windows. I don't get as many complaints because they're saying, oh, it's fine. I'm okay. I'll just open the window if it's a problem. Not all engineers say that because there's a whole bunch of other reasons that go into it. But generally, sure, if it makes people more comfortable and that's the goal is to make them comfortable, then let's do it. But sometimes the operable windows, they don't seal as tight, and maybe over the course of a year, they don't really save energy. If they, as they operate, they tend to get loose and gaps and what have you occur. So they can be a higher maintenance thing, and that's something we lose track of sometimes too as we try and design a building that's very, very energy efficient, but we forget that it needs to be maintained as well. And if your energy efficient building fails, the cost – just looking at dollars, the cost in lost productivity for the people inside or uncomfortable can far outweigh any energy savings that you had. So you have to be very careful that you don't design systems that are so complicated that they just don't work.
I want to get to, and as we work our way through this this hour, some of these alternatives that you're talking about, Radiant in particular, I'm interested in just how that works. But it seems – let me just say this before we head into a break, Steve Connor – it seems like we have a kind of an expectation now We've become accustomed to feeling a certain temperature, a certain thing. It seems like if we're going to get our minds around any kind of change or dealing with this, we're going to have to transform expectations, do you think? Or what people find acceptable, maybe? How are you thinking about
that? We have to sort of broaden the definition of acceptable beyond the air temperature. And again, I think it's our job to make people comfortable. But again, there are ways to make people comfortable that don't require as much energy. And that's really the issue. And it goes to that soft science issue of sociology and people that is so difficult for engineers to deal with. But we do need to broaden that definition. We need to say, ultimately, am I able to function comfortably in this environment? And if I am, then I've succeeded.
Let me get a few calls going as we talk about all this, because there's some particular questions I think you could respond to before we get into some of the more historical stuff. Let's take a call from Stuart, who's joining us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Stuart, glad you joined us. Welcome.
Thank you. I just wonder, why haven't we been able to figure out a way to compress refrigerant with solar power?
Stuart, could you repeat your question? I didn't get a chance to hear it.
Why can't we compress refrigerant with solar power?
It's not so much that we can't. And there's a lot of really interesting research going on alternative ways of providing air conditioning. And that's one of those things that's being looked at. There's a lot of physics and a lot of sort of engineering that goes into it, but it's coming, and there's research coming all over the place, not only on compressing refrigerant with solar power, but generating electricity, not the standard solar cells, but through sort of the more traditional thermal sense. So the question is, or the answer is, we can. The bigger, longer answer is, we're just not quite there yet.
Will it be as efficient as, will it be efficient so that it will really save money and energy?
Yeah, that's the question,
that's
right?
The
will
question.
It be efficient? Yeah.
And at this point, no. It's not certainly on any kind of a commercial sense, but that's where the research and the development is going on.
Stuart, glad you called. Thanks very much. Let's see. Heidi is with us in Salt Lake. Heidi, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm enjoying the program. I am recently back from Chicago. I was born and raised here, but the construction there is much older than here. And so I found that in the old row house that we lived in, there were double-hung windows, and we've gotten away from the old technology, the old simple solutions before air conditioning came around. And I think we should get back into that kind of thing where, you know, passive energy, where you can open the top of the windows at the top of the house to vent the heat, or you could have skylights that do the same, and then, you know, retreat to the basement if you can in the summertime, because that makes all the difference. And since I moved back, I put some siding, insulated siding, on my house, and that has caused me not to have to use air more than just three times so far, so it's really working. And I've got deciduous trees on the south side of my home and west side of my home, which provides shade. And those are the kind of solutions I think we need more of, because those are the ones that are cost-effective.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the idea of putting all of our ideas, we just need a better air conditioner, as opposed to the fact that this, it's a holistic kind of issue.
It absolutely is. And I'm glad you brought that up, because really the number one goal, the first thing we try to do, and we should all be trying to do, is reduce the need for air conditioning in the first place. And you mentioned a couple great solutions, shading, getting the west sun off of our windows, and better insulation. And in commercial buildings in particular, there's a lot going on with the quality of the windows. In other words, how much heat they let through, especially like in the studio here, we have a west-facing glass. And yeah, I imagine it gets kind of warm sometimes. The new glass really dramatically cuts how much heat comes through that glass, which dramatically cuts how much air conditioning is required, or how much is required to make the occupants comfortable. There's an enormous amount of work and progress in lighting, because lighting accounts for a very substantial portion of how much energy a building uses. And if you can reduce the amount of energy that's required for lighting, not only have you spent less energy for lighting, you've also required less cooling. And the list goes on and on. And truly, the first step in reducing the amount of money and energy we use on air conditioning is to reduce the need for air conditioning in the first place.
She mentioned something entirely low-tech, though, going to the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Those in Utah – now, this may not be an option for a lot of people in the country who are listening who are like, what is a basement? A lot of Utahns grew up in Utah. They went to these unfinished basements in the summer. I did, and where it was cooler. But what about those low-tech ideas? Again, this idea that it doesn't have to be ideal and you're going to have to adapt. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's the question.
Yeah.
Are people willing to adapt? And people are willing to do more in their house than they are at their place of work. And people are very resistant to adapting at their workplace. But certainly going down in the basement to stay cool is it's a time-tested solution. And, you know, and I mentioned how we don't want to make systems so complicated that they don't work. So the simpler is always the better. And if going down to the basement makes it so you don't have to run the air conditioning upstairs, that's the best solution of all.
Thanks very much for the call. 801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Steve Connor is with us, an engineer with Colvin Engineering Associates. We're going to start talking about history and culture as well. Though, Steve Connor, stay with us. Again, we're going to talk about some more practical aspects of air conditioning when we get back from a break. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about air conditioning because, of course, it's summer and in most places anyway, it's getting hot. We're talking about how air conditioning has changed the way we work, the way we commute, even the way we interact with our neighbors. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us now on the program is Marcia Ackerman, who is an independent historian, the author of the book Cool Comfort, America's Romance with Air Conditioning. She's been a lecturer at Eastern Michigan University, is now working on a history of spelling in the United States. And Marcia Ackerman joins us from NPR member station WEMU in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Marcia Ackerman, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm very happy that I was able to be here. I came through floods and thunder and heaven knows. I was glad, however, there's something that we cannot ourselves
control
right. So that was refreshing, but a little bit too refreshing. I'm sorry that I was late.
No, we're glad to have you. Let me begin, I guess, with your own interest in the subject of air conditioning. You've written in your book about the 1990s how you say you did a doctoral dissertation on air conditioning, and you say you thought about it as an element of culture, of American culture. What is it that interested you in particular about air conditioning and the culture of air conditioning?
The idea of control, the idea that humans had the ability and should use the ability to make the world or remake the world in a way that makes them happier, more comfortable, and generally, more satisfied with their lives. And I saw that as a kind of a particularly American trait, that we can make the world into the way we want it to be rather than dealing with a world that we are given.
Right. We should say you have a kind of aversion against air that's too cold. I mean, you write about your own tendency to prefer warm. You're from Buffalo, after all, and you like the warmth rather than the cold.
I am.
So you've talked about your childhood experiences with air conditioning, where weren't always good ones. Let's put it that way.
No, I seem to remember particularly one of the first air-conditioned cars that I ever encountered, which in those days was extremely expensive. A dear friend of my family, a person who lived in New York City, was so proud of that car, and he would insist when we visited him that we get into that car, and he rolled up the windows because otherwise, what's the point of the air conditioning? And between the darkness and the coldness and being a little bit seasick on a car anyway, I thought I was going to die.
Let me ask you this. What is it exactly, air conditioning? It's interesting. It seems like such an obvious question. You say an engineer, some engineers anyway, will say it's a mechanical device or it's a system that maintains a particular temperature. But what is it exactly?
It's the creation of an atmosphere, really. And it is... I think the idea really is that there must be a particular way to make people comfortable and to make them get in the world, you know, be in the world in a more useful way.
Yeah,
I think this whole air conditioning thing is the idea that America, as it was found, or before the Europeans came in, was a wonderful, wonderful place, but it could be made better. And that betterment is part of the idea of air conditioning.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Let's take a call from Maria, who's joining us from Lehi, Utah. She has a question that I wanted to get at, whether or not this is an American thing. Maria, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really agree with your guest here today. I'm actually from overseas. I grew up in Sweden, and I moved here to Utah 9 years ago, and we bought an older home where we had a swamp cooler in it. And I felt after a couple of years living with that swamp cooler that I almost had to get an air conditioner because our friends and family that were coming over were very uncomfortable, and at times we got to hear about it if we were considering getting an air conditioning or not. And so I really think, and I've been to four different continents in the world, and I really think it is an American cultural thing, and I think before we can even start talking about any other ways, I think it's a mindset, and like previously was said, it is summer, and we might as well enjoy it. Anyway, thank you. That was my comment.
Glad you called. So, Marcia Ackerman, are Americans more likely to be insulated from their natural environment than other cultures?
Let's put it this way: when I said the book was the romance of air conditioning, America's romance with air conditioning, I think that the romance is beginning to fade a bit in the United States. But on the other hand, there are many other places in the world that are now saying, "Wait a minute. Why don't we have the benefit of this?" And I think one of the real problems with air conditioning at this point is that there are countries that have far more problems with heat than Americans do, even though we like to complain in the summer. And in fact, when we think about China and India, not to mention the entire, of all of Africa pretty much, we are the little nub that is sort of driving what's eventually going to be, one way or another, a huge air-conditioned world.
You know, this brings up something you talk about in terms of the history of air conditioning that's kind of disturbing. It's one of these ideologies, and I wanted to explore it with you. You say that early proponents of air conditioning linked this technology to older, even ancient ideologies of civilization and race. Talk about that, because one of these ideologies was this idea that warm climates, temperate zones, they robbed men of energy and ambition. And so if you were in these places, you weren't as productive as the good people of the northern parts of North America or Europe, in fact. Talk about that.
Well, this was the crux of it. Ellsworth Huntington, a man who is virtually unknown except to me and a few other people, and the lucky ones who, of course, read my book. Ellsworth Huntington really believed that being cold was the way in which ancient man turned into modern man. Mm. That because they were able to overcome something that could actually kill them in the winter, which was, of course, the cold, and many people, of course, died of cold for many centuries, that being able to master the cold and then use it in ways that made people more productive, that was, in fact, something that was very linked to ideas of American power. It was linked to ideas of master races, you know, people who came from those cold climates. I mean, they were saying that at some point it would be Canada would be far ahead of the United States because they were able to, they were the masters of the cold, and they were not related, you know, the cold was, the heat was not as dangerous for their exploits.
Mm.
I don't think most Canadians feel that way about it particularly, but that was certainly the idea.
But these were the ideas that got people thinking about controlling the environment, that once you make control of that, people will be more productive, and we will evolve into a better class of human beings, I suppose.
Yes, and I suppose to some extent maybe we have. I think the air conditioning that was used for computers may be even more important than the air conditioning that is used on people.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Krista is with us in Salt Lake. Krista, hi.
Hi, Doug. How are you doing today?
Fine, thanks.
I don't even use air conditioning. I don't have a swamp cooler. I do have a portable evaporative cooler, which I have yet to use this summer. I live in an older building. It's about 100 years old, and it has a good cross ventilation. And I think buildings were built better back then to accommodate. I have big windows, and yeah, it gets hot. But I have I learned something when I went to Cuba. All the Cuban women carry fans, and I just carry a fan everywhere I go. I fan myself with that when I get hot, and then I'm fine for a while. And I don't have a car, so I ride a bike everywhere. And I think that not having air conditioning and going in and out all the time, it really makes me better able to deal with the heat in general because I'm not shocking my body going back and forth so much.
Well, there are two things there that I want to explore with you, Marcia Ackerman. First mm-hmm. of all, this idea, which seems to come from Krista, and I'm wondering if this is a generational thing. Suck it up. Is that what you're saying, Krista? Suck it up?
Yeah, suck it up. I mean, I grew up in Florida, and I didn't use air conditioning there, and they have like 200% humidity.
Well, so you've got Krista and maybe people of that generation saying, come on, it's hot. It's supposed to be hot in the summer. It's just different, so get used to it. But is that an odd concept to a generation raised in air-conditioned houses and buildings?
I think it is. I think it is. I think the idea is that maybe they're going to try to be more careful about the air conditioning. Perhaps you can persuade people not to jack it down to 60 degrees. Which always amazes me because in the winter people are jacking it up to 80 when they're cold in the winter. But the thing is that they still think that it's better to have a regulated environment than to have to worry or think day to day about, okay, today what do I really need to put on or not put on my body? Today what heaviness of clothing do I desire? Do I have to have a larger lunch or a smaller one because of the environment?
She raises another question that I wanted to ask you about. This idea of being shocked, you know, you walk, it's warm outside, hot outside, and then you walk into a freezing cold building, or you're working constantly in a building that's, you know, that's cold. Is it fair to say that air conditioning is unnatural? And I suppose that's technically true, but what does it mean for human beings to live in a world radically different from the one in which we evolved? There's this quote from René Dubose you use in your book, The Environmentalist and the Scientist, who talks about, here's the quote, and I want you to talk about this. Mm-hmm. To a surprising extent, modern man has retained unaltered the bodily constitution, physiological responses, and emotional drives which he has inherited from his Paleolithic ancestors. So is this bad for us? We've evolved to adapt to different kinds of temperatures, and now we're trying to keep it at one. What does it mean for our bodies?
I don't think it needs to be bad for us if we allow ourselves, between the time that we say, I'm hot, and the moment we put on the air conditioner, that we take a moment, that big important moment, to say, okay, what can I do to make myself more comfortable without necessarily having a machine in the equation? You know, what kinds of things do I have to do? Do I have to open a window, close a window, as your previous guest was discussing, which is very important. The idea of having control over your environment, especially in office situations, is extremely important and part of what makes air conditioning so fraught with difficulties for people.
Krista, we're glad you called. Thanks very much. Let's go back to the phones. Let's see. John is with us in Salt Lake City. John, hi.
Hi. I, like most biological entities, adapt somewhat to the temperature, winter and cold.
Yeah.
And I resent having my ability to adapt ruined by having to put on a jacket to go into a movie or a restaurant. I lose my adaptation by going to a cold area.
Let me get Steve Connor involved in this part of the conversation. Okay, so... John is talking about he doesn't want to have to put on a jacket when he goes to a movie theater. Although in the 50s, that's what drew you into movie theaters, I'm sure. And Marcia Ackerman, you can attest to that. But
oh, yes.
But I guess the question is, who are we cooling for? You know, John is of this certain. We go back to this idea of it's all relative, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and interestingly, in my business, if 80%. Of the people are happy, that's the best you're ever going to do.
Right.
That's the gold standard. If I can only have 20% of the occupants of a building pissed off at me, then I've succeeded. And it just goes to the idea that that caller wants it warm, someone else doesn't. And how do you ever do a system that could possibly work for everybody? And you can't. And no matter what you do, you're going to have unhappy people in a conditioned environment.
Marcia Ackerman, I guess that's a reality that you just have to take into account when you're talking about all of this.
When I go shopping in the summer, I put on socks and a sweater and various other items because I know that I'm going to be cold in there. And I get out as fast as I possibly can. I don't think it's unfair to have people, men and women, in different ways, to think about how they're going to feel and to make sure that they have something that makes them comfortable, because they know that they're going to be in an environment where not everybody's going to feel exactly the same. I think that's reasonable to say, okay, this is the way it's going to be, but let's not go overboard.
John, thanks very much. We talked about the fact air conditioning has this contested history. I want to talk about the concerns that people had early on. And I guess that surprised me that people were – even early on, I guess I had this expectation when it was starting to be developed that people were embracing it. But that wasn't exactly the case. And there's this interesting story you tell about the great writer Henry Miller, who went on this epic road trip. And he wrote about driving around, and he created America, and he wrote this scathing critique where he said that Americans had become essentially enslaved by these little comforts like air conditioning. And he said, you say in the book that he described American culture as kind of sterile and sexless and anxious and this, terrifyingly divorced from nature. So we've always questioned it as being wasteful and disconnecting us, right?
Yes, I think so. I mean, but the idea is that it's a fight between some sense of what natural is, which of course is incredibly contested by everybody, not just in the relation of air conditioning, and the idea that there are ways to make the most Americans as comfortable as possible, as happy as possible, and as productive as they possibly can be. And there are these sort of gaps where people fall through the cracks of being too cold or too hot or feeling that they are being manipulated in some way by a system that does not consider the wonderfulness of nature, for example.
Steve Connor, how do you think about this? If we can't close off a window, whether we would or not, I guess, you know, if we, or rather open a window. Is this disconnecting us? And I guess I want to extend this to the other part of the question. How did it change us, air conditioning, in terms of the way we, you know, the idea we used to be able to get out on porch. You'd go out on the porch on a summer evening because it was hot inside. And that's how you connected with your neighbors. That's how you got to know people. How has it changed us in those kinds of ways as well, do you think, Steve Connor?
You know, interestingly, I added a porch to my house, a front porch. And everyone in the neighborhood says, that was the greatest thing. Nobody sits on their front porch anymore. And that's what we do at night. I even put a ceiling fan out there, and you sit out on the front porch and say hi to the neighbors as they walk by. It certainly has insulated us, even in our cars. You know, you drive around with your car windows closed, and not that you necessarily want to be talking to the car driver next to you, but the more that you're able to control your environment, the more, it's almost like the more you want to, and the more that you take advantage of it. And I think it's like any sort of technology. You kind of adapt to it, and you start using it more and more, and you find it, at least in your mind, you find it indispensable. Hmm. But I don't think that it is.
Well, I think laziness is part of it. People may not be actually comfortable, but once they have decided where to set their system, they don't want to think about it anymore. So even though all of a sudden it becomes a really nice day, they don't say, okay, now we can turn off. They don't turn off and turn on because the weather is doing that. There are people who actually, proudly say, I put the air conditioning on at 72, and it's going to be there until summer is over, no matter what's happening in the summer. And that I find personally tragic.
You, Steve Connor, although you say that passive systems, whether it's ethically right, or that's the way it's got to work, right? People don't want to be engaged that much. They want a system to do it for them? Or how do you think about passive systems?
Well, just like Marcia said, people like to just set the thermostat at a temperature and not think about it again. So a passive system in this sort of sense is something that you can sort of set and forget and it just works. But going back to like the idea of the windows that really keep the heat out in the summertime, or massive buildings. One of your caller talked about old buildings that are big and heavy. Well, they store coolth, if you will, and they regulate themselves without the occupant really doing anything about it. If we can, it goes back to the comfort thing. It keeps going back to comfort.
Yep.
If we can say that someone's comfortable and they didn't have to do anything, well, that we're two-thirds of the way there. The third part is we didn't have any machine that made that comfort happen.
That's Steve Connor. He is an engineer with Colvin Engineering Associates, also serves on the University of Utah's Net Zero Advisory Committee. And Marcia Ackerman is with us, the author of the book Cool Comfort, America's Romance with Air Conditioning. We will take another brief break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about air conditioning, and we invite you to join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Let's go back to the phones. Jeanette has been waiting in Orem, Utah. Jeanette, sorry for the wait. Welcome.
Thank you. Sure. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a couple of questions for Mr. Coleman. One of them is, he mentioned the evaporative cooling, and I've found on swamp coolers, after a certain temperature in Utah, they just get really, really muggy, and they're uncomfortable. So I'd rather not even have a swamp cooler on. That's my first question. The second one is, with Utah's new law that allows fireworks for a full month in Utah, I've got a husband with some lung conditions, and the smoke from the fireworks really bother him. Do running air conditioners at night help at all alleviate some of that smoke for people that have breathing conditions?
Hmm. Okay, very practical questions there. To that, I guess, to that first one about the fireworks, that awful smell of sulfur wafting through the air on the July 24th.
Well, that's one of the benefits that we really haven't talked about today of air conditioning is the ability to, we've talked about sort of the negative side of isolating ourselves from the outside environment. Well, there's sometimes it's positive. And yes, it does. Keep the windows closed and run the air conditioning. You're not going to have as much smoke in the house, and you're not going to suffer the health effects of it. So let's not lose sight of the benefits of air conditioning. So yes, the short answer is yes, it'll help.
Now, the second one she gets to is a question of do people in the South, or where it's really humid, do they use evaporative coolers?
No.
Yeah. I can't even imagine.
We're in this little bubble in so many ways, and one of them is our wonderful dry climate that allows us to humidify the air. It's just unheard of in most of the country that we actually add humidity to our air in the summertime and make ourselves more comfortable as a result. You can add too much, or there is a limit, and typically it's more the muggy days, at least by Utah's definition of muggy, that our evaporative coolers don't work so well. So no, nowhere else other than a couple cities out here in the West does evaporative cooling have any kind of a market.
I guess she gets to that question again of there are going to be those days mm-hmm. where you're going to be uncomfortable. You know, it's going to be 103, 105 out there. And yes, you can make yourself comfortable. But what are you saying, Steve Conner, that they should just that's the way it is? I mean, how do you?
Well, it's
she's saying,
not.
Look, it gets muggy. I don't want to use this thing, mm-hmm. When it's really, really hot out there. So how do you respond to that?
Well, it's certainly not my place to tell her what's comfortable to her.
To tell her to suck it up.
Yeah, I can't possibly do something like that. Yeah. And everyone's different. And everyone has to decide whether they can, in fact, or want to, or have the ability to, whether it's for health reasons or other. You go to the idea that, I can't tell her what to do. I do it. We have a swamp cooler at our house. And those days, we don't get as much done. It's certainly a day where you kind of slow down a little bit and drink a cool drink, and we're able to do that. I can't say what other people are able to do.
Let's see. Marcia Ackerman, you want to get in on that? Yes. Part of the conversation?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's true that they are some. First of all, there are some days where it's almost impossible to be comfortable.
Yeah.
Even though back in the 30s and 40s, people from Florida used to claim that they were perfectly comfortable all the time because they had these lovely breezes wafting through their environment. I think those, of course, were hurricanes, but. Strangely enough, they then, within a matter of a few years, became the most air-conditioned place in the United States, and which I believe Florida may still be, although everybody else is catching up. The other thing is, how much can we spend on air conditioning? I mean, to make ourselves perfectly comfortable in a very hot summer is extremely expensive, especially, of course, for people with lesser means. And we've sort of seen and heard about people who are dying as a result of these issues.
Yeah.
Not necessarily just because they couldn't have air conditioning or couldn't pay for it, but because their houses or their environments in general didn't allow them to relax in ways that would be helpful.
Let me take a call from Tom, who's joining us in Draper, Utah. Tom, welcome.
Thank you.
Sure.
I did a remodel on a factory, and we connected all the offices to a central location in the maintenance area. And in order to solve the problem of people complaining about the air conditioning, we gave every office a thermostat. It was connected to nothing, and they were thrilled to death.
That is a great story. So, Steve Conner, that there again, if they have some sense of control, even if they feel like they're some way controlled, they're happier. That's what we want, is control, right?
We want to feel like we're in control.
Right.
And that story, there's a lot of variations of that story going around. And it goes back to the idea that if I can go adjust something, I'm going to feel like I'm able to control my environment. I've heard that story. I've never actually done it, of course, but I could see how that could possibly work, sure.
Well, Marcia Ackerman, you say your book is about control.
Yes, and I think one of the things I was thinking about when you asked me to talk about this 10 years down the line from my book, that it's not just a matter of the workers feeling they have some control over their bosses, but it's also worker to worker. You know how it is. You have these little, people are running around, and they don't all like each other. And if they don't like each other, one of the things they want to do, the one person wants to put it the thermostat up, the other one will put it down. And it's part of the fun of being a worker, I guess, but not exactly very helpful in terms of actually creating an environment that is both reasonable and perhaps not exceedingly expensive.
Yeah.
Steve
Connor, there's a whole show built on this question here, so we only have a few moments left. But I did want to get to the question of alternatives. You know, most people, there's central air and it's blasting cold air, but there are other options. Can you say something briefly about that, and maybe we can get to that at another time to talk about the particulars?
Sure. And my emphasis is primarily on commercial buildings. And we touched briefly on the idea that the first step is to reduce the need for it in the first place. Get the load out of the building. Keep the solar gain out of the building. Keep the lights from putting too much. Office equipment is becoming a huge part of the air conditioning load of a building. Everyone's got computers and all sorts of small appliances, and they all add heat to the building that we have to get rid of. So step one is definitely get rid of as much, or use it smartly. Turn the computers off when you're done. Turn the lights off when you leave the room. Draw the blinds. Just sort of common sense sort of things. Use efficient equipment and efficient appliances, and cognizant of the environment you're working in. In Utah, we should use evaporative cooling. In more humid climates, separate the need to dehumidify from the need to cool, because they're two different things. Adapt to your environment. Adapt your systems to your environment.
Steve Connor, an engineer with Colvin Engineering Associates, thanks very much for being with us. And Marcia Ackerman, author of the book Cool Comfort, American Romance with Air Conditioning, joined us from WEMU in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Radio West, a production of KUER News. Technical direction today from Dan Baumas, the program produced by Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.